From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. This is a special two-part episode that comes from a recording I made on my last trip back to the West Coast. I was in my college town of Bellingham, Washington, and I was with an old friend of mine, Chris Ann Adams. She's a writer who's seen and handled a lot of dead animals. Now, late one night, when I was in town, we walked up a hill to an old building where she works. It's a tall, whitewashed building from the late 1800s. First it was a Presbyterian church, and then it was a karate studio, and now it's a library for hard-to-find books and zines. And so we went into the side room, and there we built this makeshift recording studio out of foam floor tiles and blankets. And she laid there in the dark, and I sat on the couch where I just asked her to tell me beautiful, personal stories about dead animals. And that's what these episodes are. We're also turning this project into a short book, which we'll release soon on our website. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that after the show.
I think I'm two or three, and I'm hanging out in a little patch of sun on the linoleum in my kitchen, and I crawl over toward the fridge, and I see a mouse just sitting right in front of the fridge, so I pick it up. It's about as big as my palms. It's not really moving at all or responding, and I used to watch a lot of Tom and Jerry. And so I open the fridge and I try to feed it American cheese because that's all we've got. And this mouse doesn't try to eat anything. And so I take it to the bathroom. I walk it down the hallway. I put it in half of an Easter egg to help me kind of lift it to the sink. And I turn on the sink really gently to like a really low water pressure or like a low flow, and I try to get the mouse to drink, and it won't move. I sit with the mouse on the bathroom floor in my hands, and I just look at it, and it's not moving at all. And I talk to it the whole time, and I ask it what it wants, and I try to figure it out. I really care for it, and I really want to take care of it. I want it to eat, and I want it to drink. And I want it to be okay, but still, it's just limp, unmoving. And at some point, I must realize that it's not going to move. And I sit with it on the bathroom floor, and it's all wet from me running it under the faucet, trying to get it a drink. And I just stare at it. But I don't feel afraid. I just want to know if there's anything I can do to make it move, and then maybe it'll want to follow me around and be my friend. But it never moves.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
It's hard to know which books to burn.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
Whenever you feel ready, walk from the front door of your childhood home all the way through it. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're seeing, who you're seeing, what you feel, and what it sounds like. You know, just give me everything that's happening as you walk through your entire house, and I'll just be on the couch here. And whenever you want to, you can go ahead and start. Mm-hmm.
I really like to visit my childhood home sometimes when I'm laying in the dark. When I open the gate to the chain link fence, I look down at the pavement and I can see my dad's handprints from when he was a little boy, kind of stuffed in the corner of the concrete. And my grandparents' initials are etched into the cement, a D and an S for Don and Sherry. And there's dog prints running across the concrete. And there's grass growing over the corners of the cement. And I go up the stairs, which are really janky and squeak with every step that I take. The front door is just kind of hanging off the side of the single wide trailer. And I open the door and I see pink carpet brought in from an old hotel, recycled. I walk into my childhood home. It smells kind of mildewy. Most of the windows in the house have the blinds drawn at all times, and a lot of them have towels over them as well. And thin, translucent blue curtains over the towels. My dad tends to watch TV through just about all hours of the day, and he really likes to be able to see what he's doing. And when I'm standing in the kitchen, I can see the TV from there. It's directly in line with the sink. And when I look down, I can see my dad sitting in his recliner with the remote in his hand, just staring down the TV, his lazy boy practically in line with it. And my mom's chair is next to his, but she rarely sits next to him. She's usually off doing schoolwork or something, and my dad spends a lot of time in his recliner. But the TV's on basically no matter what time of the day it is. Down the hallway a little ways is my room, and on the back of my door there were lipstick kiss marks from one of my dad's high school girlfriends, because he had the same room as I did when he was a kid, and that was one of the few marks left over. The top bunk of my bunk bed is just stuffed full of stuffed animals and things I don't really want to think about, because I don't really know how to clean my room. I just kind of throw things up there when I don't want to see them. I would have all these gifts with sentimental attachments and I wouldn't know what to do with them, so I just pile them on the shelves. And there are boxes full of old schoolwork in my closet. I feel kind of heavy and powerless. It's a really oppressive environment to me because there's so much going on that it's hard to clear my head of anything. And my bed shares a wall with the TV. And sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night to the sounds of gunshots or explosions or whatever TV my dad is watching that night. And when I keep going down the hallway to the left, there's an addition room that my grandpa built onto the house when my dad was a kid. It's really poorly built, because I don't know how he sealed this addition onto the house, but when I go in there, I'm struck by the smell of mildew and litter boxes and just stale air, because that's where all of my parents keep their storage. There's a bookshelf with all of their college books on it. And on top of that, there's boxes and boxes of stuff piled practically to the ceiling. All of my dad's posters are up. There's an Aerosmith poster right next to a Batman poster. They're kind of sagging on the ceiling, really sad. My parents each have their own computer desks there, and I spend a lot of time on my mom's computer playing video games. And right above her desk, my cat would often perch. My parents were too embarrassed of my house when I was a kid, so I didn't really have friends over very often at all, if ever. So I spent a lot of time with our cats. I think I'm 5 or 6 years old. And when I was out of school, I would just go hang out with my cousins who lived in another trailer just up the road. It's a trailer that's equally dingy to mine. A lot of siding falling off, rickety front steps. When I first go in there, I can just smell kind of a sour milk smell, like laundry that's been forgotten about in the washer for several days. It's me and my three cousins. Barbara's the oldest. We usually end up in the care of Barbara, and we just kind of do whatever she says we're going to do. And she wants to go for a walk, and so she grabs a flat 2 liter of Pepsi, and we walk out of the house and through the weedy yard and past the dilapidated shed in the backyard, and past all the abandoned cars that have just kind of died in the field. We walk along the shoulder of the road that's just coming off the highway, down a smaller highway, and then down a dirt county road. And we climb up this little hillside from the ditch, and we're on the railroad tracks. It seems like an hour or two, but it's probably only a mile. We stop and take a drink of flat Pepsi and a couple bites of some stale tortilla chips. Then eventually we come to this place that my parents call the sand pits. The sand pits are where the county stores all of their sand for the winter that they dump all over the roads when it gets really icy. And my oldest cousin picks up a bottle and throws it as hard as she can, and it shatters in the gravel. And so I picked up another bottle and I tried it, and it rolls when I throw it, because I'm scared to throw it too hard. And she chases after the bottle, and she just kind of picks it up, and she's like, no, 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 like this. And she throws it, and it shatters. And so I picked up another bottle, and I tried it, and sure enough, that time I threw it hard enough for it to shatter and break. I can often hear the coyotes howling and singing from my house. And it seems that the sand pits is where they take their kills to. So it's one of the few places where nobody's gonna bother them at night. So there's deer bones scattered everywhere, mostly ribs and vertebrae. Sometimes there would be dead dogs or porcupines or birds. I see some kind of bird. It might be like a pheasant or a wild turkey. Just kind of spread out, looking really stiff, like there's not any life left in it anymore. It's just fascinating to me. I don't want to look at it, but I have to look at it to understand it and how it's starting to decay. And then we just turn around and go back on the railroad tracks, and head back. I've been living with my partner in this warehouse by the beach for a few months, and it just has not been working out. And the night before Valentine's Day, we just decided to call it off. Like, this isn't working, and let's not try to fix it. Let's just move on. And the morning of Valentine's Day, I wake up, and he's already gone for work, and I feel a weird sensation in the back of my mouth, and I reach in the back of my mouth and I pull out a filling, the molar farthest back in my mouth on the bottom. I feel like I just expelled something that I was holding on to that I didn't need anymore. And instead of being too bitter about Valentine's Day and the whole Hallmark holiday thing and not being in love or whatever, I called my friends to see if maybe they'd want to have a book burning, because it's something we joke about doing, but don't often do, because it's hard to know which books to burn. But I feel strongly about it today. So I call my friends, several of them, and I tell them to dress their Sunday best and to meet me at the beach. I decided to dress like I'm going to a funeral of some sort, so I'm wearing a little black dress and a big wide-brim dark brown leather hat. I drive around and go to some little free libraries and pick up old romance novels with yellowing pages, the ones that look like they haven't been touched in who knows how long. And I bring a pile of them down to the beach in this picnic basket with a lid, and my friends are late, but I'm not surprised. I'm not worried about it. So we take a circle of rocks and we line a star of books in it, just for show, and start picking them up and reading out of them while they're on fire, and then throwing it into the big fire. And I'm reading out of this one book. I don't remember exactly the scene, but something old-timey feeling that doesn't really catch my interest. And this man walks up to me and starts talking to me. He says, "Come over and drink some wine with us. We've got a dead owl." I just kind of threw my book down in the fire and followed him over with one other friend, and we go through the trees in this little kind of grove, and sure enough, there's the body of an owl just laying at the base of this tree. And he hands it to me. It's pretty small. I think it's a long-eared owl. And I'm holding it, and I notice that its eyes are hardly glazed over at all. Its head kind of lulls. Its body's really limp. There's no stiffness whatsoever. I don't know if my mind is playing tricks on me or if it's still warm, but I'm pretty sure it's dead. And I sit on the ground with it. I'm sitting on my knees, and I have it cupped in my hands, and I'm petting the small feathers around its face. And I feel a real surge of emotions, feeling really upset that owls don't like to be seen and that I'm staring at an owl's face right now at an up-close and personal range. I stare at it for like what seems like 10 or 20 minutes. I don't even really know. I lost track of time just looking in this animal's eyes. This man, he takes the owl from me, and as he takes it, he says, "I feel like I have to do this." And he rips off its head. He keeps the body and he hands me the head. We don't exchange much after that. I just have this owl head and I'm holding it and staring at it. And even if he is saying anything to me, I'm not really listening because most of what he's saying are just a bunch of swear words. He says he's keeping the wings, though, to use it for some magic shit. His girlfriend, she hands me one of the owl's talons, and she says that if I fish around and find the tendon in its leg, that I can pull it taut and dry it, clenching a crystal or something like that if I want. I walk away from their fire, holding the head of an owl and a talon. And I walk back to my fire and I put the owl parts in my picnic basket that was formerly full of all of these romance novels. And I don't really say much for the rest of the day. That night I'd planned on going to a new choir, the Threshold Choir, which sings to people who are dying. So I leave the beach and I drive to the funeral home where this choir practices. I find myself in a circle of women who are probably 45 to 65 or 70. I'm still dressed like I'm going to a funeral, and I don't dare tell anyone where I'm coming from. So I just keep quiet and I listen to these women. And they sing about angels, and they sing lullabies for adults. They sing about breath, meeting God in the garden. Toward the end of the session, they have a practice where they bring two recliner chairs into the center of the room, and they have two volunteers lay in them to practice bedside singing. And there's three or four elderly women around me. They start singing this song that goes, "So many angels all around me." The rest of the women chime in, and there's 30 voices singing this song to me. "So many angels gathered all around." And oh, I feel such a surge of endorphins. I feel really light. "So many angels, it's you I found. So many angels all around me." I start crying a little bit, and I almost feel like I left my body and like I'm circling the room above. I just feel so much momentum with everything that happened in the day, and I'm not even thinking about the boyfriend I lost or whatever. I'm trying to think about what all of this means and how it fits into the greater whole of my life and where I'm going from here, and everything that had me down just feels so insignificant all of a sudden. I go back to the warehouse where I'm living and I open the door and the house is empty, and I sit on the kitchen floor on my knees and I start to put the owl head in some salt in hopes that I can preserve it and forget about it for maybe 6 months or so. I'm always afraid to open the bag, but I finally open the bag and it's perfectly intact with all of the feathers. I end up donating it to the museum where I work in town. I've noticed that I've been a lot happier and more motivated in my life when I take time to sit with death or witness death or think about death as a presence that's around us all the time. How do I put this? It's something that's inevitable and that we're all going to meet eventually. And I think that the more we think about it, the more we're able to appreciate being alive.
Good.
We'll be back soon with part two of this two-part series. In the meantime, we're putting the finishing touches on a book version of this, which we'll sell over on our website. The book will have a foreword written by me, along with some photos that aren't available anywhere else. You know, this book will be really great for anyone in your life who likes strange ideas, or talking about death, or this podcast, or any combination thereof. When the book is ready, we'll announce it first over on our social media feeds, our Twitter, our Instagram, our Facebook, and then soon after we'll announce it on an upcoming episode. Now you can find us anytime at hbmpodcast.com, where we post photos and links and videos along with every single episode. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. This episode was recorded by me. My name is Jeff Entman. As always, I had editing help from Bethany Denton. I owe a big thank you to the Alternative Library in Bellingham, Washington, for letting us use their space so late on a weeknight. Thank you. The music you heard on this episode came from The Black Spot. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Nick White. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. Now, before we go, I just want to issue a correction from our last episode, which is called Scrap Heap Reactor. After it aired, our source Max wrote in to apologize for accidentally overstating the natural abundance of deuterium in seawater. Deuterium makes up about 0.015% of all hydrogen in seawater. I should have caught this before it aired, but I didn't, and I'm sorry for that error. All right. Thanks for listening. Part 2 is coming soon.
Tell me about your friend who brought over a liver to your house.
Oh, just the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.